You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about the impact of emotions on health and well-being. Today we're going to run down this list. We're going to run down the impact of emotions and what they have on our health and well-being for happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, surprise. For each of these emotions, we're going to look at the physical characteristics, the physical manifestations, what happens in the body as well as in the face, what happens in the chemistry, the impact that those things have on your health and well-being, the social and cognitive impact, and then for each emotion, we're going to have a little conclusion. Sound fair enough?
Yeah.
Let's get started. The universal emotions, the ones we're going to focus on today again, let's put them in the order of the presentation as well as having the correct face with the correct emotion. Happiness, the smile you see there, the sadness, the downturned eyes, as well as the pouty mouth. Fear, oh my gosh, the reaction where there's that sudden fear. It's very similar to surprise, fear, you know. Disgust, where you smell something really bad or you see somebody and you just don't approve of their actions and you're, quote, disgusted with them. Anger. Anger could be frustration. It could be something didn't go the way you want. Somebody did something bad to you. Or it could just be you wake up on the wrong side of the bed and you're angry all day. And then surprise. Surprise can be good or bad. Happiness. Happiness is easy to see, the big smile on the face. It's more than a feeling, though, because you have that feeling of happiness, but what does that do to us chemically? What is the sign of it? That it is a profound effect. Happiness is one of the ones that have the most profound effect on health and well-being. That it is important to have happiness in our lives, and it is a signifier or a symbol of a balanced and healthy lifestyle. So what is the physical manifestation of happiness? It's a genuine smile. I did a little work on a graphic today. Did you like the graphic here?
Yeah, I see.
So a Duchenne smile, and I did look that up because last time we talked about that, I was having a hard time with it. It's a French word, Duchenne smile, involves the contraction of two major facial muscles. And this means a real smile, a real natural smile. The zygomaticus major is on the side of the mouth that lifts the mouth up and back towards the crook of the eyes. That's the real smile there. And then the orbicularis oculi, which is that red thing you see around the eyes there, that little bit red. There are muscles that are around the eyes that cause the eyes to do that, those crow feet. You know, when you get the wrinkles in the eyes there. That a real smile, you both have the little bit of crow's feet in the eye and the upturned mouth. And that's something that the hint for all of our friends there who are taking photos, if you want to really look happy, kind of laugh when somebody's taking your picture. Not like out loud, but internally feel happy because that lifts up not only your mouth, but it gives you those crow feet, the real true happiness.
Not like that.
An authentic smile is a facial expression that matches your body. Mm-hmm. Your body chemistry is actually changing. Mm-hmm. It's like that little laugh that makes you have that smile. Your chemistry changes for that.
And also the theory that say, you are happy because you laughing, or you're laughing because you are happy. You know what I mean? So it's, you can try to be happy, force yourself to do this expression, and maybe you become happy.
And it does. It drives your chemistry and your chemicals in your body just by smiling and laughing. Mm-hmm. In a real smile, real laugh with people and connection. And that's one of the things that we find, that smiling, which is a sign of being really happy, is an indication of how you are feeling, and it is good for you. Being happy is good for your health. If being with people makes you happy, and being able to talk to people and laugh with people, which we find, remember the blue zones? We're talking about the blue zones, the people who live for the longest amount of time. They have these daily interactions with people that they know, people that they love, people in their community. We're going to actually talk about what happens in somebody's body when they are happy and smile. Let's go on with this. So, laughter occurs in moments of happiness, releasing endorphins. So chemicals are released in our body, endorphins, just like an exercise. Feel good chemicals. They influence posture. And negative people who aren't happy have a closed, intense posture. What does happiness look like on the face? Let's go back to that face. Around the eyes, there's crow's feet. Remember those, the wrinkles around the eyes? If you don't see that when someone says they're happy, they may be saying they're happy just to please you or like, oh, I'm having fun. But if their eyes aren't like shining, you know, when eyes are smiling, that's when they're really happy. The cheeks are pushed up. And there's that, they talk about the muscle that orbits the eye, creates those wrinkles around the eye. That is a natural image of happiness. Health impact mm-hmm. of happiness. Significantly positive, stronger immune system, lower blood pressure, and reduced risk of heart disease. Not only that, more people want to hang out with you when you're happy. Reduced stress levels in happy individuals. As chronic stress is a known risk factor for many physical ailments. Endorphins released, and we talked about that during laughter and activities, elevate the mood and act as natural painkillers. Mm. Wow, I put a period after that because it's so important. Yes. Happy people may have a higher threshold for pain, and why laughter therapy has gained popularity as a complementary treatment for various conditions.
So it's the best medicine.
You just had your appendix out. Let me tickle you. No, that's not good. That's not a good therapy for that. But that's very interesting. Let's go on with more impacts on health and well-being. That it contributes to a positive outlook on life, which is crucial for mental health and well-being. Better coping strategies, enabling people to handle stress and adversity more effectively. Resilience, contributing to a lower rate of mental health disorders as depression and anxiety. Happiness is linked to longevity. People live longer who are happy. We talked about blue zones just a second ago. Promote the importance of cultivating a joyful mindset for a healthy, fulfilling life. There's more to happiness, so much more. We're more likely to engage in social interactions if we're happy. And other people who see us being happy will want to interact with us. Who wants to interact with somebody who's angry? In fact, who would rather avoid someone who's angry? So a joyful state of mind allows for more flexibility in thinking, in openness to new experiences. And you'll see how other emotions are the opposite of happiness. So it is associated with enhanced creativity and problem-solving activities. Very interesting stuff there. Let's continue on. Conclusion, the physical characteristics of happiness are very easy to see. We know when we're happy. We won't know when we're not. We should strive to be happy. And what are those things that can cause our happiness? One, associating with friends and family and being in social situations that create happiness without the next day being depressed. Oh yeah, you could be out and have a lot of drinking, and that might be happy, but if it causes you the next day to be depressed and in a bad state and be chemically ill, maybe it's a little bit too much, but a couple of drinks, good friends, or just being out and going to a comedy show, or
there's so many chatting. Stuff, it can be happy, yeah.
That, achieving goals, moving towards your goal, maybe not getting there yet, but seeing that you're getting there is more happy than getting there, I hear sometimes. I think that's something we need to look at. Let's move on. Let's move on to the next thing, which is sadness. just looking at the face of sadness. It's not just negative, people being sad, but you can see it, the pain on their face. One of the good things about being sad is how easy it is to recognize someone being sad. If you see somebody who's sad and they're a friend of yours, you can relate quickly to how they're feeling. And the good thing about that is you can say, hey, what's going on? It is, I don't want to say an invitation to conversation, but it's an indication that maybe that a conversation is needed.
Yeah, no, so I hear that maybe not necessarily need to share, it's just feel companion. So people start say, maybe you don't want to talk, but I stay near with you. So that is enough, and maybe people feel better.
So it's often associated with pain and loss. It plays a vital role in the emotional spectrum of humans, and the physical manifestations of sadness do influence health and well-being. Let's talk about that a little bit. So we talked about what the face looks like. It's downturned. You saw the young lady's picture there. Her eyes seemed a little bit sunken back, mouth downturned. There's just this softness to the face. It's almost an absence of any muscular movement. There's a decrease in energy levels, slower movements. You know, there's not as much pep in your step. There's a lot of things. And these visual indicators help us see that somebody else is sad and maybe we can come to have a conversation with them. Vocal changes are also seen. You know, when someone's sad, they might talk sad. Let's go right into the face of sadness, the drooping upper eyelids, losing focus in the eyes, slight pulling down of the lip corners, and we talked about that. What's the other thing here? What's the impact? Too much sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Depression?
Can be.
Lead to a range of physical health issues, weakened immune systems. So the opposite of happiness, sadness can cause our immune system to become weaker as we dump bad chemicals into our body. So disruption in sleep patterns, insomnia, hypersomnia, where you get too much sleep, too little sleep, risk of obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. So sadness, too much sadness, will become something that becomes a problem if we continue to be in it. We've talked about this before. Socially, it can create the ability for others to communicate with us because they see us sad. So it can bind us together closer with other people. And it's really an important thing in our lives when we lose a loved one, when somebody we know is going away and we're not going to see them for a long time. This sadness is important because it ties us together as people. And this is sadness that doesn't go on and on and on. We can think about somebody and be sad, and then we can move on and go on to something else. We can think about them again and be sad. But it doesn't mean we live every day in sadness, because that's when it becomes a bad for our health. It can lead to greater empathy and understanding from our friends. In conclusion on this is that sadness is a necessary and important and not necessary bad thing as an emotion. Too much of it can lead to health consequences, and too little of it makes us feel, not us feel, but others, that person's never sad. There's something wrong with them. They're a robot. Don't be a robot. Be sad when you need to be. Be glad when you need to be. When we're back, we're going to talk about more emotions and the impact on health and your well-being.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about emotions and the impact of them on your health and well-being. We talked a little bit about happiness and we talked a little bit about sadness. Now we're going to talk about fear. fear, which is also part of our survival toolkit, is when something scares you, and it's how do you react. It's part of our fight or flight response. It preps us for something. So if you see how the eyes get wide open there, let's see if we can get some words on it. So it's one of the primal emotions. It triggers a complex array of physical responses, prepares our body to react quickly. It can be a protective mechanism. It can impact health and well-being, as we spoke about. Especially when it's prolonged or intense, it can be, the impact on health can be profound. So if you're living in fear at your job every day, that will lead to problems. If you're living in fear from your relationship every day, that can lead to problems.
And your job.
Your job.
Yeah, so we talked in the other show about that, you know, the level of the fear in your body can reduce immune system, create some chemical, and maybe you...
And when you are fearful, maybe you can't actually get the work done you need to get done because you're fearful, which then in turn gets your manager upset at you, and then you get more fearful because you're now... And so it can be this cycle, so you got to learn to break that cycle.
And also recognize that you are in fear, because sometimes it's the low level that people don't get it, you know, it's in fear. Belief is a stress, or belief is concern, but...
Yes. What is fear? Because again, there's so much chemical reaction and released in the body during fear, it can be a problem. Let's look at some of these things. So the fight or flight response that we talked about, fight or flight, there's a surge of adrenaline. We can only have a surge of adrenaline so much, otherwise it just stops. There's just no more to do. There's a rapid heartbeat, increased breathing rate, and heightened muscle tension. We may actually feel a tightness in our chest. We have our body prepared for immediate action, and we need to decide if we're going to confront what we're fearful of or flee, or we may flee, if we're talking about work, we may just flee into ourself. Like, we may hide in our work. We may not want to, like, there's an episode, there's an episode of some guy who posts on Instagram. And it's his boss comes, and he hears the boss coming, so he grabs all this stuff and he hides. And every time the boss comes, he hides because he doesn't want to be confronted by the boss. And the boss is like, where is this guy? And he knows the boss is angry, but for him, it's better not to confront and to hide. And so it's hiding, which is maybe fleeing in a way. But you're trapped, right?
I have this feeling when I out of company, so people start to disappear. I walk in and say, I smell bad because people escape.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah.
So what happens to the face? What happens to the body? The pupils dilate to let in more light, so they open and get wider. When you see more light, you have more visual stimulus, which allows you to see things, things that are moving, things that may be dangerous. These are survival tools. The blood flow is redirected from non-essential functions like digestion. Sometimes people, we've talked about this, throw up when something's really scary because they need all their body function to handle the fear. Their physical capabilities are enhanced for a quick response. Sweating may happen to cool the body, and people may turn white because the blood flow has been redirected. The wide eyes and open mouth are common, more oxygen into the body, more light into the body, and some people, so much adrenaline can be in the body, they can get involuntary tremors and shakes, which can't be that good. What does the face look like in fear? Ooh, this is really traditional fear, huh? Eyebrows raised and pulled together. The eyelid opening, opening the eyes and allowing light in. The tensed lower eyelid, the lips slightly stretched horizontally back to ears. It's like almost, again, it's almost like shock, but it's almost like bad shock. Like, you know this is bad. So it's a shock can turn into fear, where you're shocked by something and then you can be fearful of what you just saw.
Yeah.
Just like shock can turn into happiness when you find out it's a surprise party for you. But if it's an angry mob with pitchforks and torches, like, you know, when I was back in the village, it can be scary, it can be fearful. What else do we have here? The short-term physical response can be life-saving. But long-term, chronic, and disproportionate fear can have a detrimental effect on your health and well-being. The stress hormones released during fear, like cortisol and adrenaline, can lead to physical problems, heart disease, hypertension, weakened immune system, making the body more susceptible to illness, and chronic fear can also disrupt sleep patterns, leading to fatigue, concentration problems, and the like. So fear is kind of like
sadness.
Bad for you. Yeah. It's like sadness in some ways, too. Yeah, depression and other things, sleep pattern problems. Mentally, persistent fear can be damaging, lead to impact the quality of one's life. Anxiety disorder, phobias, panic attacks, post-traumatic stress disorder. Avoidance behaviors, avoiding people, avoiding situations, social isolation, not communicating with people. It can impair memory, right? Because when you have so much of this chemical going on in your body, the cortisol and the adrenaline, and you're stressed, it shuts down your ability to think. We talked about happiness and how it opens up our ability to think. Fear does the opposite. The brain is focused on survival at the expense of higher order thinking. So it is, what do I need to do right now to survive? Not how do I figure out my algebra problem? So if you're really scared of math and then you go to take your test, you know, people who are fearful of tests tend to do worse than people who are like, oh, I'm not fearful. Okay. I mean, they may be just as smart as each other, but the body's function and how it shuts down the ability to think.
More confident with yourself.
Yeah. So we have to learn to be more relaxed. Socially, if we are fearful, we can withdraw, avoid, have less interaction. However, one of the things that fear can do, if there's a couple of us and we're all fearful, we can commiserate. We can talk about our fear together. We may be more connected because of fear. The unaddressed fears can lead to a narrowing of life experiences, such as individuals who no longer are open to new experiences because they're fearful. You know, so if you're talking about the psychological traits, you know, openness to new experiences, extrovert, introvert, all these, the openness to new experience piece starts shutting down, which I would assume then neuroticism also might go up. You might become more neurotic the more fearful you are. So your personality can change and people can see that and sense that. And then therefore, maybe you don't want to be hanging out with people and maybe they feel not like they want to hang out with you. Could be. Let's continue on here. There we go. How to see what time we are at right now. So conclusion is that we need to understand fear and what we can do to eliminate it. Is it real? Is it not real? Can we change the situation? Can we change ourselves? If we're fearful of how we work at work because we're not doing it correctly and we're afraid of our manager or boss, or, well, maybe if we take a night course and learn how to do it better, now we can come in more confidently. We can not only be confident, which overcomes the fear, but we actually do the work better. So there's ways to address it rather than change the situation.
Mm-hmm. The point, again, is the capacity to recognize the feeling. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, so I'm done with fear. I can't take fear anymore. You know what? I'm absolutely disgusted with fear. Disgust. We're going to discuss disgust now. It is another protector of health. How does disgust work? Well, let's go right to the next slide. It's a powerful emotional response to things perceived as offensive or contaminating. It plays a crucial role in human behavior and social interaction. It is an innate mechanism to protect from harm. Just imagine you come across some food and it's spoiled. Do you notice how like we react to bad food, spoiled food, and you're like, ugh.
And also you smell bad, you say, ugh.
So I wonder if which came first, the ability to smell something as being bad, you know, oh, that smells bad, or did people like eat it at first and then the people who ate the stuff that was bad got sick? And then, therefore, the survival of the fittest.
You have coffee you cannot smell, so you eat it.
Oh, this is great. I don't taste anything.
Anything, yeah. And you become sick.
My ex-wife's food. It's great. Oh, this is fantastic. What was that about? Anyway, but disgust can, and just think of the disgust, we'll look at the face of disgust, and again, we just did, where you're like, ew, it is your senses, your taste, your smell, you're trying to close yourself off from this offensive thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you smell something and you immediately throw up because you're maybe you just ate it and you realize someone else got sick. Well, actually, this is an interesting thing. When I was in elementary school, I remember somebody getting sick at school and they would throw up. And then all of a sudden, another kid throws up and another kid.
And you hear or you see people.
You see. So now, if I go survival of the fittest, why would that make sense?
No, go to school.
Let's say that we were in a small tribe and somebody eats something and they're the first to react and they're like, oh, there's something wrong with this food, and they throw up because that's a natural
reaction.
You know, naturally they throw up. Now maybe my body didn't react yet to it, but I react to their throwing up. And I throw up because I ate the same food, but not because of the food, but because of the stimulus of the other person throwing up. So maybe there some of this reaction to someone getting sick and throwing up, mm-hmm. and the smell and how we do
it.
Maybe this is something that protected groups of people,
mm-hmm.
by, you know, like we all yawn at the same time and we all throw up at the same time. So I would say that maybe this is something that is natural and good, other than maybe they threw up for a different reason. They just happen to have the flu.
No, I see the video with when the dad cleaned the baby, you know, the diaper. So like that. So it's disgusting too, but
so these
reaction, yeah.
And these are to protect us, like the gag reflex. It's designed to expel potentially harmful substances from the body. So you eat something, and maybe you swallowed it, and you eat it again, and you're like, oh, wait a sec, oh, this is bad. And not only do you gag on it, but you may throw up what you just ate also to get it out of your system, to protect the wrinkled nose and raised upper lip, lowered eyebrows. Ew. It's like you're closing yourself off from this nasty stuff. Nausea. So what are the things that you feel? Body reactions include nausea, natural defense. It is a natural defense mechanism against ingesting toxic or spoiled foods. It can extend beyond food to any stimuli perceived as repulsive, like that person who was being really obnoxious to someone else. You could be disgusted with them. Avoidance behaviors such as stepping back or turning away. Physical avoidance behaviors are something else that is natural,
mm-hmm.
in disgust. You move away, you turn, it's protection of yourself. The face, the nose wrinkling, upper lip raised, that's what it looks like. So that's disgust. If you do that face, just do that disgust face, you actually feel, you can get the feeling of disgust just by making the face. You can actually get these feelings by looking at the facial indication of the emotion. And if you make that facial emotion, you can feel the emotion.
Yeah.
It's they're inextricably linked. So disgust does protect us by helping. It not only helps, but it helps avoid contaminated environments. It gives us a strong averse reaction to bad things to help us protect us and be a barrier against harmful substances. On the other hand, heightened or misdirected sensitivity to disgust can have adverse effects, negative effects. Excessive disgust sensitivity can contribute to the development of certain anxiety disorders, including obsessive compulsive disorder and phobias. High disgust sensitivity people may engage in excessive cleanliness rituals or avoid certain places and situations, impacting their daily function and quality of life. So people who are overly disgusted may be like, I don't go there, it's just not clean, I don't do this. And again, this is another thing that our openness to new experiences starts shutting down.
Hmm.
So there is a portion of having this emotion of disgust, which is good for us,
mm-hmm.
Whereas,
to the other level.
Yeah, and there's another one where, and I think we hit it in the next slide, but I'm going to leave it alone, is that we can see things as being disgusting or not. Like, we make this black and white thing. Oh, that's disgusting. Oh, no, that's not disgusting. It's disgusting. It's like, you get very biased in your opinion on things. Let's look at this real quick. Avoidance behaviors associated with disgust can have social implications. You can withdraw, have judgmental attitudes. You can hinder the formation of healthy social bonds because you're disgusted with how people act, where you know, maybe the place isn't good enough for you. You can become very judgmental. And persistent feelings of disgust may contribute to the feeling of depression or maybe low self-esteem if you are disgusted with yourself. So some people are just disgusted with life. They may be disgusted with themselves. It can be damaging to self-direct disgust at yourself, distorted self-image, negative thought patterns. Black and white thinking patterns, disgust versus not disgusting. We discussed that before. Disgust. These two words are so close together. We discussed disgust before. Reduction of openness to new experiences, we talked about. And it can be a catalyst for moral judgment that is not based upon fact. So it's like a prejudice.
Yeah.
It's just a disgusting prejudice. Triggers could be physical stimuli, but could also be actions and behaviors of other people who create that disgust reflex in us. And we could call that inappropriate. So disgust also narrows our cognitive perception. It we talked about the moral and ethical judgment. The disgust from facial expressions to body reactions serve as a defense mechanism, but again, too much of it, and it becomes negative. And it can change and I guess, again, cause closing off of openness to new experience. And as we talked about on others, is neuroticism. You know, that's disgusting. It's like, you can be the odd person out, too. Oh, I'm not going to try that.
I guess it's good that people observe how many times you pronounce this word, because it's the way that you verify that you have many disgusts.
Oh, yeah. If you always say, that disgusts me, that disgusts me, that disgusts me. It's like, okay, you're disgusted by too many things.
Yeah. So watch out, because that's no good sign.
Yeah. I think it goes back to like something you said, like, oh, I hate that. I hate that. I hate that. It's like, you really don't hate that. You're just using that word too liberally.
Yeah. Don't like.
You don't like.
Yeah, that's it.
I find. And that's a very simple
change.
Well, simple. When you say hate, well, what do you really feel about it? Well, I don't like it. Why don't you like it? I hate it. I don't like it because they're really unfair to people. Then say, I think they're unfair to people. Not, I hate them.
Yeah.
They're unfair to people. They don't allow people under the age of 18 in there. Therefore, I hate them. Well, no. It's, you know,
that you put some emotion that they don't make sense and create more issue versus see the picture more balanced.
You know what's interesting about that? Because I think we talk about anger next, when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
We are back with anger, right? Anger with a vengeance. It is a natural and necessary emotion. That anger is sometimes misunderstood. There are distinct physical responses and behaviors that, again, are part of our reaction, right? Our reaction to stimuli. Its physical characteristics impact our individual health and social dynamics, and it is necessary. So it is one of the most easily observed, right? Because there's so many things. It's not only the person's angry and they're loud and they're moving and their face gets red and there's just this, you know, spit comes out of their mouth, foam, fire.
Vapor.
To me, you just start thinking about this. And it's like, okay, all this emotion comes out. No more logical thinking. They must be dumping all sorts of bad chemicals into their body. And if you live too much in anger, those chemicals are always in you. And those chemicals are shown to be bad for heart disease, blood pressure, and other things. So anger, in the long run, is good from a survival standpoint, but bad from a, it can kill us if we don't keep it in check and have it be just a normal and necessary, when needed, part of our existence. The body, whatever, oh yeah, so it is part of the fight or flight, right, reaction. It does prepare us for a perceived threat, and our heart rate and blood pressure are changed as we release stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol. So now here we are again, adrenaline and cortisol back in the body. And the adrenaline makes us stronger, the cortisol tenses us up, we have this, you know, our blood changes where it is in our body. It's not like fear, but it's similar, that we get body reaction, that we, you know, part of fight or flight. What do we do? What do we do next? It can lead to physical outbursts like hitting or throwing objects. I wanted to go right there because that is one of the things, is that anger is one of the things where there seems to be now a physical altercation with something. None of the other emotions really had that, like where you're attacking or you're fighting or this or that. The others are move away, protect ourselves. This one is, all right, I'm angry, now I'm going to attack. And that's the one thing, is that it can give us motivation. It can give us motivation for action, which is why anger can be good. When someone gets you angry about something, it can motivate you for action. Right? And the others motivate you for, like, kind of, you know, being happy doesn't motivate you for something.
Yeah.
Being fearful may say, okay, I'm going to run, but anger moves you to doing something. We talk about the voice may become louder and become more aggressive. We talked about already. Breathing often becomes more rapid and deeper. I mean, we all know this, but just think about living in that state all day long. Or if you know people who are just like angry all the time.
Yeah.
How and it's stressful on them, but it's stressful on you too.
Mm.
Your anger, you can...
Next to these people is not healthy.
So imagine being an angry person next to a fearful person. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, one is living a shorter life because they're being aggressive, and the other one's in fear all the time, and they both are responding to it, and it impacts them both negatively. Find that slide there. What does anger look like? Eyebrows down and together, eyes glare, narrowing of the lips. That the physical impact on health and well-being, the physiological arousal associated with anger can be beneficial, providing a burst of energy and focus in the short term. Again, short-term anger is very beneficial. But frequent or intense anger can have numerous adverse effects. Chronic anger has been linked to a range of physical health problems, such as an increased risk of cardiovascular diseases, such as hypertension and heart attacks, due to this constant stress and elevated blood pressure. A weakened immune system can make the body more susceptible to infections and illnesses. Completely the opposite of happiness. Pursue happiness. Be fearful of anger. Run away from anger.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's true or not, but the history about the man that has discussion with the wife in Italy, and he walking like the 200 miles for the anger that he has to clean the mind, and the police found the guy. Yes, it's half I don't know how many hours or day walking,
walking.
So the anger make energy to walk 200 miles.
It does, but I guess the anger wasn't released. But maybe that's better.
They released because he walked.
But
yeah.
better that maybe he was still angry, but now he's 200 miles away, so he doesn't do something stupid.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's good.
No, people typical anger move away, you know, they live in the house, they do something to
Yes.
Maybe a good way to handle that.
I think you're right. I think if you're talking about understanding anger and managing it and understanding that, okay, I'm not going to have the conversation now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to physically do this. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to get back in check so I can
like
then...
come back the next month.
Next month. Re-engage our prefrontal cortex. I think this is the same thing we talked about with all these things. It's like being in love where we shut off our prefrontal cortex. A lot of these emotions can shut down our ability to logically think and have higher level thinking. Anger is one of them. The frequent anger can lead to feelings of guilt. We can run through this, dissatisfaction, instigating positive change. Can be poorly managed anger can lead to conflict, harm others through direct aggression or create a hostile or fearful environment. We just talked about that with somebody who's fearful next to us. Frequent anger can lead to feelings of guilt, regret, negative self-image, and it can be a barrier to personal growth and emotional development, trapping individuals in a cycle of aggressiveness and those type of responses to challenges rather than creative solutions, which come from, we talked about positive thinking, and positive thinking may be, I think I can find the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm working down a path of finding solution. If I also integrate my list of things I'm working through to find the solution, I can create happiness. So now I have step by step how to not be angry and how to be happy,
yeah,
and how to be able to handle challenges and solve them.
Mm-hmm.
Conclusion on anger is that anger, which is frequent and poorly managed, can lead to significant health and social problems. So deep breathing, mindfulness, try a different direction, like walk away. If you have any emotional challenge that it's hard for you to handle and figure out how to handle, please seek professional help, therapy. That you know, just doing something yourself may not be the final solution. Having a coach to walk you through it or a therapist to walk you through it may be your best alternative. So understand your anger and its underlying causes. It may not be what you think it is. Last part of our segment is, surprise, wow, we're at the end. So surprise, again, eyes wide open, right? Surprise, eyes wide open. And I wrote this, the insightful pause. That, and why I said insightful is that if you see, oh, I didn't even show this. Yeah, surprise, here you go. Surprise, I didn't show this. But the eyes wide open is similar to fear and similar to, what was the other one? Eyes wide open. Eyes wide open. Okay, well, let's stick with fear and surprise at the moment now. But it's allowing more light into the eyes. It's allowing you to see something. You're getting a breath of air. It's a pause for you to figure out, what is this? And is it a good surprise? You know, like surprise is your party.
Yeah.
So surprise is an emotion that actually gives you time to take in what you're seeing and actually try to understand it and process it.
Yeah.
And process it in a good way. And now maybe you process it and go, oh my gosh, I'm scared now, or I'm in fear.
Or I'm sad or happy.
Sad or happy, but it's a gateway emotion. It's a gateway emotion. It is a fleeting emotion. It supposedly lasts a second. Like, I'm surprised for a second, and then I become happy. I'm surprised for a second, and then I become sad because someone told me bad news. I'm surprised for a second because I now saw that it was... I heard a thump, and I thought maybe it was something good, but then I saw it was a tree fell over and hit my car, and now, you know, oh. So it's surprise allows us to take in information quickly, make an assessment, and then move on from there. It can help, it can influence our health and well-being. Let's talk about it. That you could have a startled response, a sharp intake of breath, or a jolt, right? Surprise can lead to a temporary pause or stillness in the brain processes, As the brain processes the new information, you can have a pause. The momentary pause is a cognitive reset, giving you time to understand and react appropriately to the new situation or information. What does surprise look like? Eyebrows raised, mouth open. I like the picture that we started with a woman a little bit better than this one. But this is it. Eyes wide open, mouth a little bit back. Not too much emotion on the face, just kind of like, okay, what's that? I'm about to see what it is and then see how I should react. The impact of it depends on the nature of the surprise, whether it's good or bad for your health. And how we interpret it, that's an interesting. How we interpret surprise, what we see, also impacts our health differently. So if it's something that is, neutral, but we take it as being disgusting, because again, we talk about biases, we talked about if you react too far one way or the other, if you are neurotic, surprise can be bad if everything bothers you, right? Because now that's disgusting, you know, that. Surprise, if you're looking for happy things in a surprise, maybe it's good for you. Pleasant surprises, unexpected good news, can lead to feelings of joy and happiness. Positive emotions associated with the release of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter that contributes to feelings of pleasure and satisfaction. It can improve your mood, enhance social bonds, and give you a temporary boost of immune function. So again, good surprises. Hey, happy birthday. Hey, here's a gift. Oh, will you marry me? Mm-hmm. Only if these things make you happy. Mm-hmm. These can all be positive for the body. Unpleasant surprises, which could be sudden loud noises or loss. You know, somebody says, oh, here's a surprise. Your bank account's empty. These responses can indicate how we react, and then how we react, you know, if it's good or bad, will have a positive or negative effect on our well-being. It's hard to be surprised long-term. You know, surprise is really the most fleeting of these things. I'm surprised, and then I move on to something else. That surprise can, I like this one. Surprise can enhance memory and learning. Arousal associated with a surprising event make it more likely to be remembered. It's beneficial in learning, where novel and surprising information can lead to a better retention. So you can get increased feelings of wonder and curiosity. You can encourage exploration and discovery, and it can lead to personal growth and a greater appreciation for life's unpredictability. It can help you be more open. Your openness to new experiences can grow.
You see some teacher in the middle of the class, they throw up something on the people and they start to do the class. So that is a technique for...
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. It's like the surprise, the stuff. We link memories to emotion and strong emotions. Mm-hmm. Surprise can be one that's a positive link. Because you can be sad about something and have that link to something, angry about something, a link to something. But a lot of those emotions can also close off part of our brain because it's shutting down our cognitive thinking, where surprise is kind of opening us up and giving us the pause, right? The pause for thought. We talked today about happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, and surprise, and the impact they have on our health and well-being when they are natural and normal versus when they are not natural, unkept in check, and how they can have a negative impact. Not how they can, how some of them can have a negative impact. I don't think happiness can have a negative impact unless you're not happy.
Yeah, but you cannot be happy long-term because you lose the flavor of happy, so the emotion has to be temporary.
So emotions are mostly temporary. When I mean mostly temporary is that you can be happy and happier, you can be sad and sadder, but they are meant to be a indication of how we are at a point in time so we can judge something. And most of these emotions are based upon survival, survival of the fittest, and what is that called? Evolutionary psychology. We haven't thrown that in there for a while. We hope you learned something about emotions, keeping them in check, keeping them in balance, how to use them, and how to analyze them and understand them for your benefit, for your well-being, and your health. Thanks for listening to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
See you next week.
Yeah.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.